Tapovanam. Chapter 15. I am aware of the past, the present, and future of everyone. You may think that it is a marvelous phenomenon that the Supreme Being should come down to earth in human form. But if you are in my position, you will not be so wonderstruck. I am fully aware of the past, the present, and the future of every one of you. That is why I do not get overwhelmed with pity. Not that I do not have compassion and love. My heart is certainly not made of stone. But if you shut the door of your heart, how can the waves of my sweet love penetrate beyond? You shed tears and say, Swami, I am blind. I yearn to see your divine form. Doesn't my distress melt your heart? When you see a blind person's misery, your hearts are moved. Does not my heart too feel pity? But as I know the entire background, including the distressed person's earlier lives, my response is naturally different. If you too come to know of things that are known to me, your reaction to that person's agony will also be different. What one reaps in this life is but the fruits of the seeds that he himself had sown in previous lives. So, I allow him to undergo what he derived from his earlier evil deeds. Of course, performance of extenuatingly good deeds will mitigate the suffering to some extent. I am not the cause of either happiness or misery of yours. You have yourself fashioned these two manacles that weigh you down. Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Evil begets evil. Once, a husband and wife, accompanied by their two children, came to Prashanti Nilayam. The parents as well as the children were very handsome, and the whole family made a picture of beauty. They eagerly desired to meet Bhagwan personally. They saw Colonel Joga Rao in that connection and requested him somehow to make it possible. Impressed by the good looks of the couple, Colonel Joga Rao felt that it would be very nice if Baba could give them an interview. So he interceded with Baba on their behalf, mentioning also that everyone in the family was very handsome. Swami said, "You are speaking so highly about the beauty of the parents and their children. That is all right. But do you know that both the little ones are blind?" Colonel Joga Rao was taken aback. Swami had not seen the family yet. Joga Rao himself did not notice and could not imagine that the two lovely children were sightless. When he met those people again, he inquired about their children's lack of eyesight. He was distressed when he was told the ugly truth. The lady once again entreated Colonel Joga Rao to plead on their behalf with Swami to bless her children with sight. Moved by their pleasant manner, Joga Rao raised the matter once again with Swami. He got no reply. The next day, Swami came out of his place with the day's newspaper in hand. The item referred to a new story. In Bukkapatnam, two children's eyes were blinded by their stepmother. After reading the shocking news, Colonel Joga Rao stared at Swami. "What would you do if you were to deal with this incident?" asked Swami. Colonel Joga Rao answered instantly, "I will turn the heartless mother blind." Then Swami softly told him, "But God does not do so. On the other hand, he makes her children blind. As for these two little ones, leave them to me. They will certainly be happy. But what about their mother?" Baba moved away from the place, leaving Colonel Joga Rao stunned. This brief conversation was all that happened. But Colonel Joga Rao realized in his mind that the puzzle of a universal mystery had been unraveled in a flash. What had he asked of Swami in favor of the couple? What did Swami mean by drawing his notice to this day's news item? And what is the profound significance of Swami's conversation with him? Evidently, Swami did not wish to reveal anything directly to the unfortunate mother and add to her mental anguish. It all added up to this. Every person would have to suffer retribution for past sins. Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba says, God is just like a postman who takes out of his bag letter after letter and hands each one at the appropriate address. Members in one house read their letter and burst out in joy. Another household suffers misery with what it received. As for the postman, he is least concerned with the contents of the letters he delivers. His role is merely to transmit each letter to the correct addressee. God too does the same. Picking up the food thrown away then. Accompanied by Swami Karunyananda, Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba once went to Dharmakshetra in Mumbai. He stayed in his apartment on the upper floor, while Karunyananda was given a room situated on the ground floor, right beneath Baba's room. Some prominent persons of Mumbai were coming to meet Bhagwan. The staircase they used was adjoining the ground floor room. And to avoid being disturbed, Karunyananda bolted his door from inside. As he looked out from his window, he saw a very disturbing scene. Just outside the compound wall, some children were vying with stray dogs to grab crumbs of food from discarded leaf plates. The scene filled him with surprise as well as distress. This is the age when God Himself has incarnated on this earth and is moving in flesh and blood among human beings. What's more, on that very day, He was present right in that very building. Is it not ironical that human beings were to fight with street dogs for snatching a few discarded crumbs of food? Just as these thoughts passed through his mind, there was a gentle touch on his shoulder. He turned round and found Sri Satya Sai smiling and looking into his eyes. Karunyananda was flustered and said, Swami, I bolted my door from inside. How could you enter the room? Baba countered, If I want to come in, can bolt stand in my way? I have come to take you for meals. Then Karunyananda told Baba about what was agitating his mind. Swami, I am troubled by a small doubt. You are God incarnate and right now present here bodily. And just look there, behind the wall. Children are fighting with street dogs for picking up mean crumbs of food from the garbage. How come, Swami? Bhagwan explained patiently. They had spent their earlier lives in ease and luxury. They disdainfully ate from tables laden heavily with every kind of rich food, pecking a little from this and a little from that plate. They threw away much more than they ever ate, contemptuously discarding precious food. In this birth, they are picking up what they had earlier so recklessly wasted and consigned to the garbage heap. Subsequently, on the occasion of the World Conference of Satya Sai Organizations that took place in Prashanti Nilayam, Swami Karunyananda addressed the audience. Swami was present on the dais. In his speech, Karunyananda referred to the above incident, causing considerable surprise all around. In his discourse which followed, Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba clarified, Two birds are sitting on a branch of a tree. One is eating the tree's fruit. The other is just watching like a mere witness. This incident was mentioned in one of the Upanishads. The inner meaning of this is, the tree is the body. The fruits are worldly happiness and sorrow. The fruit eater is the soul. The witness is the supreme being, Paramatma. The birds are no doubt appearing as two distinct entities, but actually they are truly the same. The spiritual essence of man is the supreme principles reflection or shadow vision. In Baba's own words, Paramatma's Abhasa Rupam is Jivatma. Even so, experiencing happiness and sorrow is the lot of Jivatma. They do not touch Paramatma. Paramatma is only a witness. These words of Bhagwan Baba elaborate the inner meaning of the beautiful Upanishadic parade of two birds on a tree. Ocean of mercy. Despite all that has been stated earlier about past deeds engendering either retribution or reward in the present life, it is a fact that if Bhagwan wills to shower mercy and compassion, his kindness knows no limits. It is so spontaneous that it is pointless to search for its cause. In this context, it is relevant to refer to what Swami recounted on 4th July 1996. It was a heartwarming tale and moved every single person in the gathering. The boy who spoke first here, said Swami, hails from Simla in Himachal Pradesh. His younger brother also is studying in the primary school here. About 10 years ago, when I was in Vrindavan, their mother was brought to me on a stretcher all the way from Himachal Pradesh. I put my arms around the boys and drew them close. I told their mother, "These are my children. From now on, you need not worry about them at all." She too gave her word to Swami, "Sai Mata, I am entrusting my sons to you." And she breathed her last. I brought the boys here and enrolled them in the primary school. From that day right up to this day, they never shed a tear. Their mother passed away. Their father comes but rarely. Everybody left them to Swami's care. After all, Swami himself is looking after them. That is exactly what Sharanagati means, total surrender. I see these boys morning and evening every day and inquire about their welfare. They never experience even for a moment the misery of losing their mother. One day, the lady warden of the hostel brought the younger boy to me saying that he was grieving for his mother, weeping for her and refusing to eat. He was then 5 years old and was in the first standard. I took him to the interview room, put a ring on his finger, did this and that to amuse him until he forgot his grief and became cheerful. Ever since, he's always seen smiling and laughing. Children's hearts are pure and clear like crystal. This shows how much courage and strength love can bestow on the loved ones. Could these boys have been so content and cheerful anywhere else? They are so full of happiness and joy because they are with Swami. Swami's love is not one mother's love, but is the love of 1,000 mothers. I personally look after every single detail. Unable to understand this, you worry. Swami has not looked at me or talked to me. Despite innumerable responsibilities that I shoulder, I find time to look after and inquire about every single child. The boy who has spoken a little earlier said, as you have all heard, "I lost only a single mother, but I have gained the motherly love of 1,000 mothers." That is why, when commencing his talk, he addressed Swami, "My mother Sai." It is such ardent faith that protects them and blesses them with complete success in their lives. Namasmaran and Rupa Dhyan. For 8 long years, a foreign devotee at Prashanti Nilayam had been confined to a wheelchair, for he had lost use of his legs. Nevertheless, a pleasant smile was always lighting up the brave man's face. Prior to his affliction, he used to exercise and actively participate in sports and games. But fate forced him into this dependence on the wheelchair. Once, several visitors from his native land were sitting together in the audience hall. Swami invited all of them into the interview room. Since this handicapped person was tied down to his wheelchair and was also at a different place, he could not move in along with the group. who had rushed into the interview room. He too was from that same country. Should not Swami have called him too? He was wondering and eagerly looking towards Swami. Meanwhile, Swami already passed him by and went ahead a little further. But suddenly he turned back and called out to him, "Oh, you also go inside." He was thrilled and began propelling his chair towards the room. The ever compassionate Bhagwan ordered him, "Not like that. Get up and go walking." The poor man was shocked. He stopped nevertheless and tried painfully to get out of his chair. Laboriously he freed himself, stumbled a little, but soon pulled himself together. He broke down. Unable to control his spasms of weeping, he threw himself at the lotus feet of Swami. 8 years of tapas and suffering was thus crowned with glorious fulfillment. Release from retribution. Swami said on one occasion, "You may be thinking that one will have to suffer in this birth for the evil deeds done in past lives, and that no amount of God's compassion can exempt you from it. But I am giving you my word that you need not have to undergo the consequences of previous karma. Hence he is worshipped Sarva Papa Kshayakaraya Namaha." True enough. Look at all those who are suffering from disease gathered in Puttaparthi, sitting and waiting for Baba. They have totally surrendered themselves at Swami's lotus feet. Having left all their cares in the hands of Swami, they do not seem to be suffering at all. If they were somewhere else, the intensity of their illness would have made them miserable. They would have been experiencing the agony of hell. Here, as they wait looking forward to the supreme happiness of having Swami's darshan, they suffer not. They are lost in anticipation. And during darshan, they are transported to heavenly bliss. They forget themselves, lost to their pains and aches. After darshan is over, they relive in their wonderful experience. Rumination adds to that pleasure and prolongs it. They meditate on the form of Swami. Conversing with others, sharing of experiences and recollecting the sweetness of Swami's words, deeds and leelas, their time literally flies. Then they begin looking forward to the next day's darshan with hope, anticipation, expectation and imagination. Devotees never know passage of hours in Prashanti Nilayam. When do they find time to experience retribution? They are shielded and insulated from suffering and sorrow, just as a patient under anesthesia is protected from pain. The period of suffering retribution passes off smoothly with hearing, shravan, remembering, smaran, contemplating, manan, meditating, chintan, viewing, darshan, and touching, sparshan. In other words, in filling one's body and soul with Swami, his divinity and glory. Entry into Prashanti Nilayam, both physically and metamorphically, is nothing but pariharam, that is, remedy for and relief from sorrow of every kind. Chapter 16. Significance of Namasmaran. Hare Nama Hare Nama Hare Namaiva Kevalam Kalo Nastaiva 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 Gatir Anyata. Chanting of the Lord's name is the only way to liberation in the Kali Age. God's name only will redeem us. Any mighty task can be achieved by chanting the Divine Name. Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Namasmaran means remembering or chanting repeatedly God's name. It is one of the spiritual practices enjoined on an aspirant endeavoring to reach God. The importance Swami attaches to it is illustrated by an incident. A devotee asked, "Swami, we often hear about total surrender, Sharanagati. How do we accomplish it?" Swami answered softly, "Bangaru, Sharanagati is beyond you. Why do you bother about it? Resort to Namasmaran. God Himself will be at your beck and call. Swami once explained the special significance of Namasmaran. It is the most sublime of all the spiritual practices. It consists of japam, chanting of God's name repeatedly. It is the most infallible penance, tapas. Kuchela could attain Lord Sri Krishna's grace only through Namasmaran. When you do Namasmaran, intone the name with fervor, deep devotion and love. It bestows on you immense benefit. In this Kali Yuga, Namasmaran is enough to earn salvation and release from the otherwise unbroken cycle of birth and death. Namasmaran is the one and only divine medicine capable of curing you of lack of mental equanimity, avarice and other ills which torment you. It gives you abiding peace and contentment. The name you choose can be any one of the thousands of names of God, or it can be any one of the names now in common use in any religion, country or region of the world, or in any section of devotees. Select any name and devote at least 5 minutes every day for Namasmaran. Make it a part of your daily routine. It will give you immense benefit. Tulsamma. A long time ago, a devotee called Tulsamma was residing in Prashanti Nilayam. While she was once going to her native place by auto rickshaw, the vehicle dashed against a wayside tree and overturned at a deserted place. She was seriously wounded in her wrist. While falling down from the auto rickshaw, she loudly cried, "Sai Ram!" Within moments of the accident, a car arrived at that lonely spot. The driver picked up both Tulsamma and the auto driver and took them to his house. The lady was aware that her wound was serious enough. But as she came to know later, she had been rescued from a more terrible fate. During interrogation, the auto driver revealed some startling details. When he noticed expensive gold ornaments on her body, he was tempted to rob them. That was why he drove to that isolated spot and intentionally crashed into that tree. He expected Tulsamma to become unconscious and he thought he would be able to get away with her ornaments. But at the moment of impact, she suddenly cried out, "Sai Ram!" That Namasmaran had the effect of changing his mind. He was surprised that just at that moment of her terrible ordeal, she could utter God's name so fervently. He felt that she must be very noble and pious, and that he should not rob such a lady. Moreover, although normally the spot was most of the time unfrequented, surprisingly on that specific day, somebody came in a car at the crucial moment and ruined his plan. The auto driver was disturbed at this coincidence. Was it divine intercession? The poor fellow shuddered at the very thought. The driver confessed all this to Tulsamma, narrated every detail of the incident, and expressed sincere remorse. He did not stop there. From that time onwards, he became friendly and very close to her. He would visit her often and inquire about her welfare. He became, as it were, an intimate friend, in fact, a well-meaning relative. This episode highlights the power of Namasmaran. Namasmaran means summoning God. Pedda Bottu, the great devotee of Bhagwan Sri Sai Baba, of whom we have read earlier, often asked him, "Swami, what is meditation, dhyan, and how do we do it?" Swami used to put her off. He would merely say, "Don't bother about dhyan. You are doing Namasmaran, that is good enough." One night, she was sleeping under a tree opposite Swami's residence. As it began to drizzle, she removed herself from there and prepared to sleep in the veranda outside Swami's room. As she was making her bed, she said to herself as a matter of habit, "Om Sri Sai Ram." Swami came out and pulled her up. "You stupid, won't you allow me to sleep?" Peddabuttu said, "Swami, who stopped you from sleeping?" Swami retorted, "When you are summoning me, how can I go to bed and sleep?" The poor lady explained, "I am in the habit of doing Namasmaran and uttered Om Sri Sai Ram within myself. I did not intend to call you." Bhagwan told her, "What does that japa mean?" "It amounts to calling me." Namasmaran is no different from summoning the God. Namasmaran means telephoning God. Murthy, Sri Kasturi's son, was doing research in geology. In that connection, he had to tour forest areas in Assam. On one occasion when he was alone, a wild bear noticed him and began closing in on him. Murthy fled for his life, but the animal continued to chase him. As he ran over some rocks in his desperate flight to safety, he tripped and fell down, but continued to cry loudly, "Baba, Baba!" Within moments, a motor truck appeared there from nowhere, and Murthy found safety by getting into it. After a few months, he happened to be in Prashanti Nilayam. Swami told him, "I received your phone call and dispatched a truck. Did it reach you on time?" Maya, the terrible dog. Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba once described the power of Maya in a metaphorical way. He said, "God is the master of Maya, delusion, illusion, ignorance. Maya is like a terrible dog standing guard at the entrance of God's home and does not allow outsiders to come near him. If you are earnest about reaching God, there are only two ways. The first course is to put on the form of the master. Then the dog does not harm you at all. This is known as sarupya, that is, assuming God's form. But you should not make the slightest mistake. Otherwise, the dog will not spare you. The second course is to cry out for the master in a loud voice. He will hear your cry. He comes to you, receives you with open arms, and holding your hand, leads you inside with overflowing kindness. This is called samipya, that is, being in closest company with God. The dog will not do any harm as you are with his master. Being God's pet dog, Maya obeys him. If he wills it not to give you trouble, you will not be touched. You will know no fear." What a simple and beautiful parable Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai has given us. He has revealed how he, of his own volition, surrenders to his devotee. How easy is the second course? The devotee has only to call God most earnestly with all his heart, with agony in his voice, with yearning suffusing his whole being. This is Namasmaran. Millions of Sai devotees have found through personal experience that God responds to Namasmaran and presents himself before his devotee with boundless mercy and compassion. Baba's exhortation is that incessant Namasmaran of a deity so elevates the devotee that he attains the form of that deity. Bhagwan says that incessant smaran of Lord Sri Rama's name by his brother Bharata resulted in Ramayana, in the latter looking like Sri Rama to all. A similar thing happened with Uddhava in Sri Mahabhagavat, who did uninterrupted smaran of Lord Sri Krishna's name. Earnest prayer. When you do Namasmaran, fill it with great longing, anguish and love for God. God always looks mainly for the intensity in his devotee's prayer, said Baba, and illustrated the statement with the following charming story. Adi Shankara was then a little child. Their family deity was Goddess Rajarajeshwari. Shankara's father used to worship the Devi every day. One day, he had to go out to some place on business. Therefore, he entrusted the task of Devi worship to the little boy. The child performed worship as usual and ritually offered milk to the deity. He waited and waited in expectation. He had always believed that Devi was actually drinking the milk offered by his father every day. So he waited for Devi to take milk. But it did not happen. In great anguish and with tears flowing down his cheeks, the little boy earnestly pleaded, "What is the matter, my mother? Won't you accept milk offered by me? Won't you bless me with your grace?" The motherly heart of the Supreme Mother melted in compassion and pity on seeing the agony in the tender child's heart, and she gulped down the whole milk that the little devotee offered. Shankara knows that the milk which his father daily offers to Devi was treated as holy, and after puja, his father would give a little of that as tirtham to every member of the family. But on this day, not a drop remained for such distribution. The goddess had taken all in a single gulp. He feared that other members of the family would suspect him of having swallowed the entire quantity of milk. Overcome by shame and desperation, Shankara wept. Moved by his distress again, the merciful Devi filled the container full with milk. She did not pour milk from her hand. The milk that she gave came directly from the Divine Mother's breasts. Shankara's agonized prayer was thus amply fulfilled by the mother. An exactly similar incident happened very recently, which Swami narrated as follows. A person who is now here among you suddenly cried out, "Swami!" in an excited and loud voice. I sensed the distress, faith, and yearning in that cry. What happened was that the sari of his wife had caught fire. Flames raged. Stunned by terror, she could not remember me. The husband was helpless and desperate and cried out for me. Their place is 200 miles away from here. The moment I heard the call, I was there and put out the flames before much harm could be done. What drew me there was the deep anguish in that cry. I am ever waiting for you. During Swami's public audience on one day, a devotee was continuously calling him in great anguish, "Swami, Swami." Swami noticed him and invited him into the interview room. He was longing for Swami's love, for Swami's divine proximity, and for an opportunity of conversing with Swami. Swami entered the room, closed the door, and was bolting it. The devotee could not hold himself any longer. He blurted out, "Swami, I have been waiting for you for the last 3 weeks. For 3 long weeks, Swami." Swami turned round and said affectionately, "Bangaru, do you know for how many years I have been waiting for you?" The man was thunderstruck. Bhagwan actually waiting for him? He was overwhelmed at the thought. Unable to bear the impact of the flood of Baba's love, he started weeping. Yes, it is a fact that Swami is waiting every moment for each one of us, wondering, when will he come? When? He says, "Whenever you come to me, Bangaru, you will find me awaiting your arrival." But the devotees excuse themselves. "Swami, I cannot come just now. I am deeply entangled in many things. I find myself enslaved. I am unable to come at present, Swami." Bhagwan is indulgent. He reassures his devotees. "Don't worry at all, Bangaru. It does not matter when you will be able to come. Take your own time. But so far as I am concerned, I will always be waiting for you. That arrival may take several lifetimes or births even." Several devotees plead for a personal interview with Swami. "Swami, Swami, interview please," they cry out. He answers, "Wait, wait." It does not mean merely that they should await their turn. It also means that they are too weighty, too heavy. They have to long for many more days or even many more years in some cases. They have to suffer the agony of not being called to his presence. After they undergo some tapas, after some penance, Swami invites them for interview. That is to say, the seeker should first lose weight through austerity, self-mortification, incessant namasmaran and meditation on Swami. He has to unburden himself of the load of evils like attachment and hatred, which are weighing him down. When the devotee prepares himself in this manner, when the burden of weight is shed and he becomes light, Swami would certainly invite him to come close to him. Swami himself explained this in a different manner. He said, "The more you become close to me, the more you earn my love. You become more likely to burn. What will be burnt are our evils, defects and impurities. Such a burning leads to spiritual purification, to refinement. As the process of burning is accompanied by Swami's love, which acts as a shield, the aspirant is able to withstand the fiery ordeal. The oppressed are my children." When Sri Kasturi was principal of a college in Davanagere, Karnataka, he had an attendant called Anantappa. That man had great devotion for Swami. He would gather puja materials like flowers, fruit, joss sticks and camphor needed for the bhajans in his master's home. To ensure that they were of the best quality, he would scout the entire market shop by shop. Standing in front of Swami's picture in the house, he would implore him most pitiably to let a flower drop into his hand. He would be alone in front of Swami's picture, conversing with him. When a faded garland removed from Swami's image was given to him, he would treat it as holy prasadam. One day Swami gave one of his photographs, a large one, to Sri Kasturi and told him, "Take this to Davanagere and place it in Anantappa's temple." Anantappa's humble shanti truly became a temple by Baba's word. Vibhuti was dropping out of that photograph and countless people came seeking it. One Swami remarked also that Anantappa was like Vibhishana in Sri Lanka. The husband of Anantappa's younger daughter was working in the department of railways in Mysore. The couple stayed in an obscure house in Bangalore. That fellow was of a suspicious nature. He doubted even his wife's chastity. He harassed her incessantly. She was confined to a room like a prisoner. Nobody could intervene and bring him to the path of reason. Unable to put up with such persecution, the poor woman implored her husband to take her to Sri Sathya Sai Baba in Puttaparthi. If Baba declared her to be chaste, she said, her husband should let her be in peace. Otherwise, she would end her life in Puttaparthi herself. Anantappa, his wife, their daughter and son-in-law travelled to Puttaparthi. Swami was all kindness. He invited them into the interview room and told Anantappa's son-in-law, "Your wife is illustrious and as pure as Sita, wife of Lord Sri Rama. She is like Goddess Parvati, consort of Lord Shiva." He tried to reason with him, but the fellow did not relish Swami's words and became abusive. Swami threw him out and closed the door on him. He advised Anantappa not to worry. He also assured him that the man would surely mend his ways soon and live in happiness with his wife. On the way back, they reached Penukonda late in the night. They sat in the railway station awaiting the midnight train from Guntakal. Anantappa's son-in-law went on blabbering and rubbishing holy men and mendicants. Anantappa was distressed because the man had not obviously changed his evil ways. The train steamed in at midnight. The boy helped Anantappa, his wife and daughter into a third-class coach of the train and boarded a first-class coach himself. He could travel in a first-class coach as he was a railway employee. At about 1 a.m., that is, an hour after midnight, the train stopped at a station called Thondibhavi. Suddenly, Anantappa's son-in-law began screaming in pain and moaning loudly. Hearing the disturbing noise, the guard came into the coach. Railway staff in the station also gathered to find out what's happened and what was the problem. The fellow was found rubbing his cheeks. Terror-stricken, he was furtively looking all around. The guard asked him, "Who entered this compartment and slapped your cheeks?" Weeping and moaning, he got down from the train, went and sat in the station master's room and told him what had happened. About 6 miles ahead of Tondibavi station, he said, lights in the compartment were suddenly switched on. I got up and sat on my berth. There was reddish illumination as if Sai Baba had filled the whole space. Baba started slapping my cheeks. He was all over the space around me, and I was receiving slaps from every direction. As he beat on my cheeks, he was saying, "You refuse to believe me when I say that your wife is innocent and chaste? Will you stop harassing her or not? She is my child. Not only she, all the oppressed are my children. Will you obey me? Will you?" As the train approached the station, the reddish illumination disappeared. Normal bright light took its place. After this incident, there was radical transformation in the couple's lives. They started living amicably in complete harmony and love. After a few months, Bhagwan Baba was conversing with some devotees. He said that Shirdi Sai Baba would often display anger, but this present avatar was one of love. Sri Kasturi meekly interjected, "Swami, in this present avatar, did you not beat anyone?" Baba replied, "I am now the personification of love." But Sri Kasturi persisted, "In this avatar, haven't you beaten anybody else?" To that Swami said, "Are you referring to Anantappa's son-in-law? What I did to him was only out of love for him." Sri Kasturi said, "Swami's love and grace were amply showered on that poor, simple girl." The ever-compassionate Baba added, "Yes, on that son-in-law too." Goat and mind. A king called several villagers together and gifted each of them a goat with an order that every animal should be well fed by its keeper. But he imposed just a single condition. When the goats were brought back to him when ordered, they should not be eating green leaves at all. In fact, they should display total distaste for leaves. As an incentive to the villagers, he announced a reward of 10,000 rupees to the villagers who would successfully tend the goats as directed. The villagers thought that if a goat was fully fed and if its stomach was full, it could take nothing more. It would refuse even green leaves. So they made it a habit to feed the animal so fully that they would not wish to touch anything. A girl, however, followed a different method of training her goat. She placed green leaves before the goat, and when the animal was about to feed on them, she gave a beating on its mouth with a stick. Repetition of this procedure had the effect of deterring the animal from touching green leaves even when they were placed right before it, although its stomach was not full. Sometime later, the king ordered the villagers to present the goats for inspection. He found that the goats started eating leaves as soon as they were placed before them. But there was one goat that was not even looking at the leaves. Instead, it was looking at the stick its keeper held. The king was delighted and promptly presented 10,000 rupees to the girl who successfully trained that particular goat in the manner ordered by him. Control of mind also requires similar hard training and severe discipline. Arjuna, eminent that he was, admitted, "Chanchalam hi manaha Krishna, pramadi bhalavat tridam." O Krishna, mind is unsteady and fickle, confusing, strong and inflexible. He prayed to Krishna to enlighten him how to subdue and control such difficult and unruly mind. There is no doubt that the only way to conquer mind is to practice arduous and relentless spiritual discipline, sadhana.